The Red Skull's next target is President Kimball. And if this country loses Top Kimball, it will be a disaster. Captain America, you've got to help us.
Would you please pull over the car? I am going to get sick.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. I am your host, Alex Navarro, and folks, we got ourselves a doozy this week, if ever there was one. Before we get to that, I must once again introduce my fellow Watchcasters, Vinny Caravella.
Yes, Avengers Assemble. Here we are.
I don't think the Avengers want to get anywhere near this thing.
Listen, you can't get there without being here first. You got to build.
I think you could have maybe gotten there without going here first, but, you know, look. Going there with us also, as always, Brad Shoemaker. How you doing, sir?
I think it's remarkable that anyone got there after they went here.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's
surprising that there was a Marvel film franchise at all after this.
Yeah, so this, again, our movies this month have been, you know, lightly themed as the highs and lows of the pre-MCU Marvel Universe. We started with the highs because we really wanted to watch Blade. Now it's time for the lows. I'm not going to say this is the lowest of all lows, because, again, that David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury movie is out there terrorizing people still. But this movie, the 1990 to 1992 Captain America adaptation by technically Columbia Pictures, but there's a lot of, let's just say there's a lot of Canon Group stink all over this thing, is our movie this week. And I chose this one because the director, Albert Pyun, who is a low-budget filmmaker that I have some admiration for, did make this film and also just passed away a couple of months ago after a long battle with multiple sclerosis. So I wanted to just pay a little bit of tribute. Even though this is not the movie I would say is his signature work, it fit the theme, so we're doing it.
Okay.
Deep sigh. That's the way to start this off.
I think we need to set the table, and you did a little bit here. Comic book movies of this era, were not good.
By and large, no.
No, they were just not good.
I mean, the
good one.
Batman.
Batman.
Okay, fair enough. But Batman was also good in a Tim Burton way,
yes.
Not in the way that we kind of... The general public appreciates Batman movies now. It was silly, comic booky, kind of...
And high budget is the thing.
And high budget, but it was not necessarily...
It's not this.
It's not this, and a lot, like... I think people still looked at comic books as not a serious thing that needed to be adapted for the screen. If you're going to do it, you need to be comic book accurate, which... Boy, that's not what you should do.
It's a hard road to hoe, especially with the budgets we're talking about here.
Like, my first question about this movie is how many people even knew that it came out at the time?
Not a great many.
Because I sure as hell didn't.
So, I think at least some of your questions will be answered by getting into the history here of this
film. I mean, you saying that he is a low-budget filmmaker immediately gives me more context around... how and why this thing is the way it is.
Well, so here's the thing, is Albert Pyun, again, yes, most of his films are pretty low budget. It's a lot of action movies and, you know, sort of like his first big movie was this movie called The Sword and the Sorcerer that actually made a decent amount of money. It was like an 80s, you know, like fantasy epic type thing. And it was not a high budget film, but it did pretty well. And the thing about Albert Pyun, at least in the stuff that I've seen, which if you are looking for stuff in his catalog that I think is actually good, Cyborg, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, is a really good batshit Van Damme movie.
Okay.
Nemesis, which is a direct-to-video cyberpunk action movie, is better than it has any right to be. And there's a couple of others in there that I haven't seen, but I've heard are pretty good, like Radioactive Dreams and some other things. But his thing is, he was well-regarded, one, because he made pretty decent action movies on a lower budget, and two, he worked extremely fast. Like, there's a interview right after Pyun's death that I saw going around of Christopher Lambert, who worked with him on a project, of him talking about how much he loved Albert Pyun and how working with him. But he also said to him, it's like, dude, we don't have to do this fast. Like, we don't have to go through these takes so fast. Take your time. And he's like, no, you don't understand the budget. We gotta go. Mm-hmm. So he was ruthlessly efficient and really good at what he did. It's just that he was not given a number of opportunities to do anything on a larger scale.
Now I'm going to piggyback on Brad here. You saying that this was made pretty low budget and made very quickly with not a lot of takes also makes more sense in this movie because, boy, this thing looks like it was slapped together with the seams popping apart sometimes.
The way it was framed, I watched the making of featurette, which is the only behind the scenes thing there is. It's a 20-minute interview with Matt Salinger and Albert Pyun, and that is it. There's no commentary track or anything.
Okay. I started to say, man, I need to see that, but then, excuse me, of course they didn't have cameras on set, because how could they with a budget that?
Was that thing from Entertainment or E or something? Because when I was looking up about this movie, they said that there was a...
Entertainment Tonight was on the set at one point.
Oh, Entertainment Tonight. Oh. Was it made from that?
This was, this was made when they put out the Blu-ray release, I think in the last 10 years or so.
Okay.
Because Arrow did a limited edition version that is out of print now.
Okay.
But in that interview, the way they both talked about it and some of the stuff I've seen Ronnie Cox say about this movie in the past is that everybody loved the script as it was written. And over the course of putting together the budget, figuring out the shooting schedule and all that stuff, a lot of the stuff that people liked about the script had to be thrown out. The bigger action sequences had to be scaled down significantly. There's a ton of flavor scenery that in the director's cut, which you can only find on one of the DVD releases of this movie, not the one that is out in HD, which was assembled from work print materials that Albert Pyun got a hold of at one point. There's 11 minutes of Steve Rogers walking around in LA in the modern times being the fish out of water that you don't really get much of in the theatrical, quote unquote, cut of this movie. So there was character stuff in there that also got excised. And it sounds like just a lot of the stuff people really liked about it going into the project could not be done on the budget that they had.
I don't know where to start with this.
Do you want to talk about the history?
Sure. Yeah. Because okay. when I looked up how this thing got made, it's actually a little more interesting than maybe just the Bad B movie.
Yeah. The rights got passed around a lot is the thing.
What was Marvel at this time? They were still mainly just comic books at that point, right? They didn't have much of a kind of pan-media strategy in the late 80s, did they?
But is this the dark time? Is this the lull of comic books? Is this near the... Marvel wasn't doing well for a bit, was it? Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I don't know that this was the nadir of Marvel's cultural relevance at this point. They went through some different bad patches over the years, if I remember correctly.
But this is post-Image, this is post-Valiant, Dark Horse, all of those things, right?
No, it's not. Image came around, I think, around this time.
Okay.
Valiant may have existed, I think.
I remember Image getting big in the early 90s, I want to say.
Yeah. Because that was some ex-Marvel people that spun off to create Image.
This sank them, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But Marvel at this point, yes. The comics industry, I don't know if it's at its healthiest point at this point, but Marvel is still a force in comics, such as it is.
Hmm.
But you're right, they don't have a unified media strategy at this point beyond the comics. And so a lot of different studios had different rights licensed for the various properties. And that, I think DC was doing a similar thing. It wasn't all just one company doing DC stuff at this time. It was just more successful. The Superman stuff did well. Obviously, when the Burton Batmans came around, those did well. But there wasn't much else outside of the TV stuff that Marvel had done with the Incredible Hulk, the short-lived Spider-Man series, the other Captain America TV movies, which I will say, Captain America is actually the one that has the longest history of screen adaptations. There was a serial in the 1940s that I ran for a number of episodes starring Dick Purcell as Captain America. And then there were two TV movies in 1979 starring Reb Brown of Mystery Science Theater fame. By that, I mean he was in a Your movie and Space Mutiny, which were both, I think, Mystery Science Theater projects.
And if anybody hasn't seen it, you should look up the trailer because it's Captain America in a motorcycle helmet throwing a translucent frisbee basically around.
It is the beefiest Captain America you'll ever see in your life. That is a meat boy if there ever has been one. in that real 70s barrel-chested kind of way.
Mm.
But so this particular time, there were studios that were stepping up rights for Marvel stuff, but very little of it was coming to fruition. Around this time, the Punisher movie starring Dolph Lundgren happened. There were a couple of other, I think, direct-to-video things that may have found their way somewhere, but not much. And so this project was originally... Universal Studios had the original rights for this. And they were trying to put together an actual big-budget Captain America movie starring... And their intention was to get Jeff Bridges to play Captain America and Peter Fonda to play Red Skull.
Okay.
That never happened.
Didn't quite pan out that way.
No, definitely not. Sometime in the 80s, the rights were sold to the Canon Group. Now, do you guys know anything at all about the Canon Group?
Not one thing.
I don't think so.
So they are... Calling them notorious is maybe like overstating it slightly, but they have a real colorful history of... Well, let's just start with it. So the origin story of the company, it was founded by a couple of guys in Southern California, and they were mostly producing English language remakes of Swedish softcore movies.
Okay.
That did not last very long, I don't think. And so at some point, the rights to the name and the catalog of whatever they had was sold to Menahem Golan and Yoram Globus.
Okay.
Who were a pair of Israeli cousin film producers. And when they took it over, Canon took on this life of its own as a company that mostly produced a lot of schlocky action movies, but also it produced some fairly well-regarded films as well in the middle of all of that, but they mostly financed those by producing a lot of schlocky action movies.
Okay.
And so their shtick was they would go to Cannes every year, I'm never going to pronounce that right. And they would have these elaborate promotional reels of all the things they were intending to make, and only a fraction of those movies ever actually got made. Hmm. There is a great reel, in fact, that includes this Captain America movie they were going to make.
America's favorite superhero explodes onto the screen, waging a war on today's criminals. Canon Films presents a live-action version of Captain America, directed by Michael Winner.
Where it is just like 30 films that they are intending to make, and I think maybe 10 of them actually got made. But they would pre-sell the rights to a lot of this stuff, and they would use that to finance projects.
Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I went to their Wikipedia page. This is a lot of movies.
Yeah.
There's
one year where they produce something like 40 films.
Oh my gosh. This is insane. There are like, this is hundreds of movies in like a not that long a span.
They are also widely credited as one of, if not the, but like one of the driving factors in the ninja craze of the 80s, because they made a ton of movies with ninjas in them, including the American Ninja franchise.
Okay. Okay. That helps put it in some perspective.
They also made Cobra. Like the fucking Stallone movie. It was what I think that was their biggest success financially was that movie. So eventually in the late, so they had the rights to this. They were also going to make a Spider-Man movie that never happened.
Within this unsuspecting city, history's greatest experiment creates tomorrow's greatest superhero, Spider-Man the movie, a live action spectacular directed by Joe Zito, based on the characters created by Stan Lee.
But they had the rights to this for a while and had a bunch of different people that were sort of attached to it at various points. And then in 1989, Menahem Golan left Canon and he took the 21st Century Film Corporation, which was one of the companies under the Canon Group, with him. And then he helped produce this Captain America movie with Columbia Pictures, with the rights that he secured for that. And so the film itself came together because they knew Albert Pyun from having worked with him on some stuff before. And they only were able to secure a budget of about $3 million, which is like the catering budget of a modern Marvel movie.
Yeah, that as you drop factoids here, all of this starts to make more sense. And that budget figure is one of them.
That budget figure is a big part of the reason why they had to make just about every creative choice they did. They filmed most of the movie in Yugoslavia, because I think it was just cheap to film there, and it had enough European castles and other things that they could use so that they would not have to build sets, because that would have been too expensive. And there were other things they were supposed to do. Like, there was supposed to be a bunch of stuff they were going to shoot in pickups in L.A. They were supposed to actually go to Alaska to film the stuff with Cap and the ice, and they never did any of that. The only mm-hmm. thing they managed to do were a few of the pickup shots in L.A. of him wandering around in, you know, in Southern California. They did all the Alaska stuff on a soundstage.
Get out of here.
Yeah. No, I know. It's it's hard to believe.
Wait, what? I'm not sure I understand how that's possible.
Which part?
The Alaska stuff?
Oh, I might be conflating the Canada stuff with the Alaska stuff. I'm sorry. I forgot. I forgot that at some point they conspicuously cross over into Canada.
Yes. He kind of awakens in that little hut.
Right. The ice. You're talking about the frozen in ice.
Yes. Alaska they were supposed stuff. To do a bunch of shooting in Alaska, and they just never did any of it, apparently.
Got it. I thought you meant these outdoor wilderness scenes were on a stand. I was like, what?
I think even some of those outdoor wilderness things were done in Yugoslavia.
Huh. Mm. Okay.
Because they did not have much of a travel budget either. They didn't have much of anything budget.
Yeah.
So... talking about our cast here a little bit before we get into the last bits of production, we have Matt Salinger as Captain America. Do you know who Matt Salinger is?
I came across this about 2 minutes into this podcast and had to suppress my whatever was about to come out of my mouth.
Uh-huh.
This dude is the son of J.D. Salinger?
Yes.
The fuck?
Wow. Author of Catcher in the Rye, yes.
Oh, wow.
The fuck?
Wow.
So Matt Salinger had not, thing. He had done some acting at this point, not a ton. He'd been in some stuff like Revenge of the Nerds, but had never really taken off as an actor. I do think this might actually be his most conspicuous starring role of all films. He mostly produces now, but the reason they cast him was because they originally wanted to get two actors, like in a Hulk type thing, where they were going to get a skinny guy to play, you know, original sure. Steve Rogers. And then Pyun wanted Howie Long to play the juiced up Cap.
Huh.
And they were like, we're not hiring two actors for this. Find someone who fits both roles. So they decided that Matt Salinger was tall enough to present as juiced up Cap, but also skinny enough that they could make him seem like he had polio at one point.
Interesting. Okay.
And that, you know, look, he's not a great actor, but there are some great actors in this movie. Ronnie Cox as the president and Ned Beatty as Sam.
Ned Beatty is probably one of the bigger, I mean, that's the person I recognize. Actually, I recognize two other actors and actresses in this.
We'll get to them in a second.
I
was pretty excited when I saw Ronnie Cox in the credits.
I'm always happy to see Ronnie Cox and stuff, and he seems like he's at least having some fun, if not giving much of a performance.
There's some stuff there.
We have Scott Paulin as Red Skull. You'd be forgiven for not recognizing him considering the sheer amount of makeup they put him under for this thing. But he was in stuff like The Right Stuff, Team Wolf, Turner and Hooch, Pump Up the Volume, did a ton of TV acting in the 80s. Mm. And then, the parents from The Christmas Story are both in this movie. Darren McGavin and Melinda Dillon as the General and Steve Rogers' mom, respectively. Huh.
Which, like, his mom could have been his sister. Like, he looks older than his mom in that one scene they're in together.
Like, he's supposed to be, I think, in his early 20s, and that does not read at all.
I mean, she looks pretty young to be his mom, but also he looks kind of old. It's a weird thing.
And out of all the things that happened in this movie, the one thing I texted Alex about was, why is the Christmas Story cast in this movie as soon as the General came on screen? Which is great. I like that actor. I'm glad it's the only other thing I've ever seen him in.
He plays a pretty good shitbag in this movie, I guess. Yeah. I mean, as good as anything is in this movie. Last details here, I will say, yes, Vinny, you were talking about this, I think, offline, but this movie, while credited as coming out, quote-unquote, in 1990, it had several release dates. It was originally supposed to be fall 1990, but there were multiple other dates announced between then and winter 1991, and the movie itself actually went unreleased for a full 2 years before debuting as a direct-to-video and on cable release in summer 1992, it got an extremely limited in-theaters release internationally.
Okay, I think that was the final piece of the puzzle that I needed to hear for this movie to now make sense, that it was not a wide theatrical release. because I very much came out of this going like, that felt like a made for basic cable movie.
Yeah. And that's pretty much where it ended up. I mean, it's not quite a Roger Corman Fantastic Four situation where it is like a lost film, but it is very much a, if you got a hold of this thing, it's because you knew how to get a hold of it and not because it was just there for people to find.
Okay.
Can I read this one little bit of background that when I was looking into what this movie was that I noted as the one thing that really caught my eye?
By all means.
From a Wikipedia page, it said, in the Philippines, the film was released as Blood Match on December 11th, 1991, in a double feature with a Snoopy film.
Correct. Also, Albert Pion made another movie that is called Blood Match, so I don't know what the hell was going on there. That is just a martial arts movie. So,
I love it. Great.
Clearly a Bloodsport ripoff of some kind, but man, I don't know. Where do you want to start with this thing? Because I feel like just recounting the plot isn't even really necessary here. Let's just go through the things you guys want to talk about, because there is stuff to talk about here.
Well, I'll say I don't really know enough about Captain America to know what they're drawing from in terms of canon, what they're inventing. And I've seen the MCU Captain Americas, and I think they're very
all of
good.
Them?
I think so, yeah. Okay. I think I've seen
There's
all
three
of them.
Think two of them are pretty great, and the other one's at least okay.
Are you counting Civil War as
yes.
one of them?
Okay, that's the one so I think is okay. Yeah.
There's the first Avenger, Winter Soldier,
yeah,
and
I think those
Civil
are
War.
Both good.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier is like just about the last Marvel movie I saw, period. And I think it's one of the better ones that I've seen.
Absolutely.
Because it's like an actual, it's like actual genre film and not just like that, like bland mishmash of high budget action.
So I know some Captain America from that stuff and some a little bit just from comic stuff and going back when I saw those reading, going mm-hmm. back and looking up history of comic stuff. I don't know if what they're selling. Okay. I said this to you guys at one point. I've said it before. I had an art teacher or an art director or somewhere in my life said, you got to give the people what they want, not what they think they want.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that applies to this with like, people might be like, you have to do it by the book. You have to give Captain America the ears, the wings on his suit. And he's got to have this and he's got to look like this. And it's like, and I feel like the MCU did a pretty good, the modern stuff did a pretty good job of like, we're not going to do that, but just wait. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, yes, this is actually what we wanted, was like not looking like that.
You want the flavor, not the texture necessarily.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like current Captain America design evokes all that stuff, but is not completely ridiculous.
So I will say Albert Pion apparently did want to make some alterations to the look of Cap, like because in this era of the comics, like Captain America, I think, had a black suit that was a little bit more sleek looking than the old classic style. But apparently the rights holders would not let him do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of things you can say about the MCU output generally, but like costume design is pretty damn good. Like they've gotten pretty good at depicting these kinds of character designs in a real world setting.
Agreed.
In a way that is like plausible and not cheesy.
Not as cheesy.
And without just having to do the X-Men thing of let's just put everyone in black leather.
Right. Like they still look like the characters you remember from the comics, but you don't like laugh out loud when they come on screen. They're like, oh yeah, that's a good looking suit.
And these are pretty fucking laughable, what we're saying here. Like there's a couple of things about both the looks here and the characterizations. But so for Cap in particular, yes, this is evocative of the original Captain America suit design, but it's rubbery as shit. And he's literally got fake ears on the headpiece.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wait. Ears, not
ears.
On the wings.
Oh, no,
the wings.
Ears.
They like, tried to cut holes in the ears, and apparently it would cause mad chafing.
I missed that. That's amazing.
So there's rubber-ass ears on the side of the thing in addition to the wings.
Well, on rewatch, that gives me something to look for.
Yeah. But also the Red Skull, the way he looks here, that ain't how the comics look, either in his later version or in the original. He's just a dude with a skull in the comics. That's it.
This is kind of gross and milky-eyed.
Yeah. It's pretty grotesque. Yeah.
It is.
I'm not gonna lie.
And so two things about this. One, they changed him to Italian for this, and I cannot figure out why. I have not been able to piece together what caused that.
That was like my number one question about, like, is this like how it actually is? The abducted Italian aristocrat origin of Red Skull?
Any of that story, that backstory is canon to the comics.
Is this not like a, like, was there Italian money in this? Was there like a co-production? Is there...
Again, they shot it in Yugoslavia. So okay. I genuinely do not know what the inspiration was to make him Italian instead of German, a German Nazi, but...
Wait, was he... What is the origin of Red Skull? Like, was he German originally?
Yes, he was... So Red Skull is straight up a Nazi. Like, he is okay. A Nazi supervillain.
Like, I mean, to be clear, like I'm very aware of the sort of like Hydra Nazi analog situation, but I didn't know if they had ever like started in just he was a straight up Nazi. Or
my
not.
Recollection, and again, I am not a comics expert, so anyone in the comments is more than welcome to yell at me. But my recollection is that he started out as just straight up division of
yes.
Hitler.
Yes, originally portrayed as a Nazi agent and protege of Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
So okay. Yes, that's about as direct as it gets.
Because Captain America came around during World War II when, like, you know, basically, like, images of punching the shit out of Hitler were very good for comics.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a line in this movie that is, like, probably pretty analogous to why they created the character in real life, right? Which is like, oh, he will be a living embodiment of what America stands for.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Yeah. But so they change him to Italian, and again, his look in the comics, and I think if I remember, the Hugo Weaving version of him in First Avenger is pretty much just a skull face. There is no weird like division lines in his face. It doesn't look like he's wearing like 10 pounds of makeup around the face.
I want to say this version feels like not necessarily a skull, but the skin is just gone.
Yeah,
and
it's
and
just
you're
gone
left with like
askew.
Pulpy. Yeah, or you're gone with you just have the pulpy mass under your skin.
Yeah,
and we haven't finished getting rid. It's a very fresh Red Skull.
It's yes,
pretty gross looking.
It's pretty
honestly.
Gross.
It's one of a couple of things in this movie that I find incredibly jarring for a movie that seems like it is ostensibly aimed at children. And I don't like whatever make stuff for weird stuff for kids. I'm all for it, but like. Between the opening scene of Red Skull's family being gunned down by Nazi fascists so they can take him and then turn him into this. And then when you see what he looks like, oh my God.
Yeah, I think they're Italian fascists in the intro. Yeah, but,
but they're Nazis. I mean, look, they're part of the Axis.
Oh, actually, they're both. Actually, I'm sorry. There are these guys look like straight up SS or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a guy that I thought was supposed to be Mussolini. I was like, when he first appeared on screen and that, I was like, is that supposed to be Mussolini? Like, this movie is already so ridiculous that I can't tell if that's what they're trying to get across.
He's just another Italian fascist. There were many of this time.
And they do a shot with a skinned rat looking thing that was like not a bad little bit of like
some okay stop
work.
Motion there. Yeah, yeah, it's not a great creature design, but they're working with what they've got.
Yeah, I was kind of like okay impressed with that. But they, I'll say this: if you're looking for a place to start, they tried to cover a lot of ground in this movie.
Yes, in 97 minutes, they are trying for some things that maybe they can't.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, part of me wanted to be like when we came in here, like, all right, you've done it. We finally watched our first like truly interminable movie. But at the same time, especially as someone who like had to watch this for a work thing, perhaps the best thing about it was when I looked at the running time.
Yes.
Like, oh, it's only 90 minutes.
I mean. Here's the thing.
This is halfway over already. Okay, fine.
I don't think this movie is interminable. It is bad, but I think it's bad in an entertaining way. Like I am a disciple of the Mystery Science Theater school of bad movie watching. I think there is fun to be derived from a terrible movie as long as it is sincere and is as long as it is having fun within its limitations. And so this is a movie to me that is in that category because they are trying to do some fun things. A lot of it is not working. The stuff that isn't working is at least funny for the most part.
For the most part.
For the most part.
This movie had the vibe to me of watching all of the scenes from an FMV game stitched back
totally.
To back without any choices.
This is FMV ass Captain America.
Yeah. There's one shot in here that in particular... that I just wrote, this is the bad ending you get in the FMV game, and it's when he's strapped to the rocket and takes off.
Yep.
Like, that's like, oh, you messed up a choice. This is just that. All right, I'm just going to read out some things that I had here that were ridiculous.
Okay.
And chronologically, and you guys add your own or jump in, but start with Steve Rogers as an adult man who's very tall, going into the army and like having his goodbye party and looking for Bernie, his would-be love. He runs. He's supposed to be recovering from polio, but like runs all the way to the pier to find her crying, and she just whips around and says, "It's because I love you." And there's a weird edit there where like the music stopped or something, or like an insert shot.
There were a couple of other spots I noticed where it sounded like the score just kind of stopped with a cut or something.
It's worth noting that Albert Pyun has kind of disowned the theatrical cut of this movie. They basically took the edit away from him at a certain point because I think he was upset about things they wanted to take out. And so I think part of what got him access to that print footage that he used to make his director's cut was him agreeing to just excise himself from that project. So a lot of the edit stuff, I think, was done without any of his
real,
because there's some editing in this movie that is a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
But yes, this whole opening sequence of introducing you to Steve Rogers, his life, him getting into the Super Soldier program, this is like 7 minutes total.
it's a lot. Maybe we should just like very briefly go through the high points of the plot as we go. Just the first like 5 minutes of the movie is the creation of the Red Skull with this Italian scientist who like at the last minute has a moral crisis about what she's about to do to this abducted child and then flees.
Jumps out a window, yeah.
And defects as he is being turned into the Red Skull. I love that they apparently just put out a call for applicants to be Captain America.
Yep, 600.
And he's just like, oh, he's the best candidate out of the 600 who applied. He's just some dude who's like, hey, I'll be Captain America.
It's called Project Rebirth, Mr. President. Dr. Vaselli, a scientist who escaped from Italy, has perfected a process that can take a boy with birth defects and make him as fast and as strong as an athlete. Hitler already has a version of this super soldier, an Italian boy called the Red Skull. We will have a regiment of these men, and we found our first volunteer out in California. His name is Steve Rogers.
Yeah, it's not a great introduction to who Steve Rogers is or what any of this is, but again, this is a movie that is operating on as little time as they can to get from point A to point B, so...
Yeah, for sure. I could have mentioned this later. I did not clock that Bernie and her daughter are the same actress.
Yeah, like, it took me a bit to get that as well.
Until I saw it in the... especially because once they're in practically the same scene together, Bernie is in, like, heavy... aging makeup kind of, you know what I mean?
Which wasn't so like, terrible. It was maybe
no,
like,
it's not fine. Good, yeah. But it's, I've it's seen not way terrible. Worse.
It was not quite like George and Lorraine from Back to the Future 2, but like, you know, it was in that vein.
I will say the whole bit with him getting with his ex-love's daughter kind of toward the end is still like,
it's a little odd.
It's a little odd.
It's a little odd. Actually, I thought the daughter was very entertaining. I thought the performance that she put in was it Sharon as the daughter?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like she was kind of a real shit talker. I thought she was pretty fun as a character.
Why don't you just take out an ad for him in the classifieds? You know, outdated superhero seeks billionaire former child prodigy with one hand and a heavily reconstructed face. Discretion assured.
All right, already.
Yeah, she's chewing some scenery. I think that this is maybe a movie that needed a little more of that.
Yeah, yes.
Because
sure.
Matt Salinger is not a great actor.
Yeah, there's maybe a certain charisma lacking there for Captain America.
He is at best like kind of amiable, like he's pleasant in that maybe like that kind of like matinee idol kind of way, but not a great actor.
Okay. All right, let's keep going here. They have his send-off party. Like you can tell, Bernie's head over heels for him. He goes off with the Italian scientist to get turned into Captain America. The scene where they're not even really introduced. It's a military officer and a dude in a suit with a big mustache that show up to this diner and like secret entrance their way into an underground lab underneath this diner. The whole sequence of him becoming Captain America. Or particularly what happens right at the end of that.
It is high hilarious.
I fucking lost it, man.
Is that guy, because I only put this together after in the credits, is the guy who is bringing the other guy in, the guy who's the U.S. military guy who's bringing the guest in, is that supposed to be the young general?
He looks very familiar.
It is. Yes. Okay. The guy who is like kind of the weird little like fussy assistant guy, that is the guy who becomes the general.
It's like not clear.
No, it's one of several things this movie fails to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
But yes, this sequence where they turn him into Captain America is pure cartoon ridiculousness. It is some Dr. Frankenstein bullshit.
I mean, not only the, like, let's just throw the lever and, like, zap this guy into being a superhero. It's particularly the thing after that.
Yes.
Where kind of sniveling military guy brings mustache guy over to meet the doctor. He's like,
Heil Hitler!
It happens so fast. Like, he goes from, like, shake her hand and, like, literally in the same sentence goes from, oh, congratulations on Heil Hitler! And, like, like, pulls out a gun and shoots her and, like, gives a Nazi salute.
Like,
and
you
then,
can tell he'd been rehearsing that, just the right timing for it.
Vital signs are stable.
Thank God.
Condition yellow. Shutdown complete. All systems return to stage one. Personnel, please remain at station.
Dr. Vaselli. Congratulations.
Thank you, Lieutenant Fleming.
I'd like you to meet Richard Ehrlich. He's a special observer sent by President Roosevelt.
Oh, remarkable work, Dr. Vaselli. Congratulations.
Heil Hitler!
Oh, my God!
It happens so fast, and then Captain America, like, leaps out of his chair, even though he's, like, seconds away from being, like, fried with the superhero juice.
But so here's the thing. Isn't it a super soldier
there is
serum?
They show insert shots of some kind of serum, like, getting injected.
But so what is the thing they're blasting him with?
He's also surrounded with, like, are they lenses, or there's, like, kind of radiation-emitting-looking stuff?
It looks like they just pulled shit off the set of an old Ed Wood movie, and we're just like, this is science, I don't know.
In this movie, by the way.
Yeah, he really takes a lot of bullets and just mostly keeps going. But it's, just to close the loop on this whole sequence, it goes from the Nazi, the plant shooting the scientist, to that guy getting punched by Captain America into a big rack of old computers, and electrocuting in the most comical, over-the-top, like, vaudeville almost looking...
It's how I would perform it if I was asked to, like, be electrocuted by old electronics.
He's flailing around with one foot kicking up in the air and screaming and just, like, thrashing. It's so goddamn stupid.
It's so funny. It's supposed to be, but it is
probably my favorite
funny
moment in the movie, because I actually had to back it up and watch it again because I could not believe what I had just seen.
There are three sequences of the movie that I'd say are legitimately true high comedy, and this is one of them.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And then the doctor's like, whatever, like, you're the best of us, you're America, and I'm dead.
God bless you, my boy. Stop them. Never give up.
I won't, Dr. Vaselli.
And then,
by the way, I used to be a fascist, but I'm not anymore.
And then zero training montage, anything. Like,
ain't got no time for that.
He goes straight from the chair in which he becomes Captain America to on a plane to Germany to go infiltrate their most top secret installation.
Oh, no, wait. He's in the hospital for a hot second. Because,
oh, yes.
For about 5 seconds.
To have his quick dialogue of... when's he going to be good, Doc? He was shot, man. It's going to take a while to Captain America. Oh, we don't have time for that. There's some missile happening that's...
Blood dripping out of his IV when he gets up.
There's a missile that's going to hit. We got to get him out there. And then Hipstead, where's that missile, guys?
Like, there's no 10 seconds of exposition to even, like, outline what Captain America's powers are. There's no training. Nope. There's, like, this dude you just picked up off the street. Now is expected to be, like, a combat expert. Like,
put him in the suit, give him the shield, let's go.
And even then on the plane, he's just, like, just kind of talking about the gear and like, so, maybe one of my favorite lines in this movie is, when does the rest of my squad get here? Oh, about that, the doc kind of had all the knowledge in her head, thought it was, for that.
She never wrote anything down.
She's
dead.
So you're kind of...
What does he say? He says, you're the only one of whatever you are that there's ever going to be.
You all right with that there, Shield?
Could have used a little more time to practice. Like about a month.
Don't you worry. You're going to have those two resistance fellas down there to take you through that launch site like they was escorting you to the senior prom. Besides, you got that crazy fireproof uniform Dr. Vaselli made up for you.
She didn't know much about camouflage.
Nope. But she sure did love the red, white, and blue.
Colonel Lewis? Sir, there's something nobody's talked about. When do I get some fresh troops in my battalion?
Dr. Vaselli had all the details to the process in her head, not written down. Same for whatever she made the uniform and the shield out of. She thought it was safer that way. I'm sorry, I believe that you're the only one of you there's ever going to be.
Ready!
You ready, son?
Yeah. I won't let America down, sir.
Then a quick throwaway of like, yeah, same thing with the shield, I guess, that she made you. Yes. And the suit, the fire-resistant suit that she made you. That's all special.
Not great for camouflage, but, you know.
Let's never talk about those things again or bring them up or why you have them. That's all in the past. Let's move on and throw you out of a plane.
Let's just throw you into this Nazi installation and have you get spotted immediately so that you can throw your shield into this guard tower in one of the goofiest fucking shots I've ever seen in my life.
That was pretty good. I appreciated that shot. That was like, all right, I need more of this.
Is the shot I rewound like three times. You'd be like, wait, is somebody just throwing the shield back off camera? Because they show the shield goes straight and then kind of off camera. They just see it kind of pop back in from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You can, I think, actually see the wire pulling the post down when it's collapsing, if you look close
and
enough.
Rogers seems about as surprised as all of us that this actually worked. He's kind of general, like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Why do I have a shield this entire movie?
Well, yeah, because apparently he received no training, as far as the audience is concerned.
Well, too bad for him, because like 90 seconds after this, he is locked in a fist fight with Red Skull inside of a top secret missile base.
Oh, you mean this top secret parking garage?
That is about to blow up the White House.
Yep. Wait, should we get to the scene?
We should do this part. I was gonna say,
this is my favorite part. This is important. This is Red Skull monologuing. He's like, stole Red Skull at this point. He's gonna take on the world. This is the height of the Nazi Empire.
So he's been Red Skull for at least, I'm gonna say, like 10 years at this point, because he was a young teenager, I think, when they kidnapped him.
Yeah, well, I think it was 36 to 43, right? I think it's like 7 years.
Okay, so maybe he's even younger than that. But
he reads as like a 45 or 50 year old man here.
Because the actor who's playing him super is at least in his 40s, I think.
Right. Until you mentioned that, I didn't even realize, like, oh God, this is like a 20 year old person or something here.
And he is, he's just hamming up. He's excited about this whole, he wants to take on the American version of my brother.
He can tell he's way into this, like oh, we're two sides of the same coin. He's my equal.
You are a perfect symbol of America, my brother. Weak and self-pitious. You have even failed to teach me English, but...
I am much practicing while you sleep. Where is the big bomb going? The big bomb is going to the... are you say Casabianca? No, don't tell me. I know. It's White Alps. A present for President Roosevelt. Tell me. Do you think I could be president of the United States someday?
And I feel like Scott Paulin gets like 60% of the way there to the level of hamminess this role demands. And I think part of the problem is that the sheer amount of makeup they have dunked on him makes it hard for him to really emote. Even later on, when they put the regular face makeup on him, it is really hard to discern any kind of emotional feature from him.
Oh, man. This movie does have some moments, I guess I have to say, like when he loses the fist fight and they strap him to the rocket. They basically decide, like, okay, what can we do with Captain America? Let's strap him to this rocket we're about to shoot at the White House.
They bolt him on there. Someone in there went in there and did some fucking heavy machinery bolting to get him on there.
And then Red Skull, like, basically what? Goes up to taunt
him,
I
guess?
No, he
calls him back or something. Like Captain America.
Well, he initially goes up to taunt him, but he keeps a little distance.
Yeah, yeah. And then Captain America calls him in a little closer in the...
We don't have time.
It's like 10 seconds before the rocket launches. He grabs his arm and will not let go.
Wait. Listen to me.
No time, Flyboy.
Ha!
two can travel cheaply as one, you sick bastard. Now stop the launch. Stop it or I'm taking you with me.
Halt!
Disgraziato!
Unmöglich! Es ist zu spät! Zu spät!
This is no time!
Oh. Falling hand!
The mighty! No!
And he pulls out, Red Skull pulls out this knife, and did he mean to cut his hand off?
No, he was trying to cut off Captain America's arm.
That's what I thought.
Is that, okay.
It's a little hard to tell. That's what I thought,
though. Again, he can't see very well under all that makeup, so he can't really see what he's doing.
Like, what it kind of looks like to me, and I guess you're confirming, is that he's going to try to cut Captain America's arm off, and then Captain America kind of jerks his arm up at the very last second. So he misses and cuts his own hand off instead. But then the moment after that, I encourage you to go watch this shot again of the rocket lifting off with Red Skull holding his stump of an arm, screaming and like thrashing around in circles in front of the rocket in the most cartoonish way.
It's really got some FMV vibes.
It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah. It's really incredible.
And just this whole setup is completely, like, it's stupid as stupid gets. Like, this fist fight taking about 10 seconds.
Red Skull just strapping bodies him, he just destroys him.
Yeah. It's not even close. And then, and we're going to take a break here, but just, we have to get to the part where he is encased in ice, because, again, the sequence of events that leads to this taking place is as stupid as anything has ever been in film history. The rocket is about to arrive at the White House.
It's on its way. Here it comes.
It's this close.
It's this close. It came all the way from Germany, I guess. Or were they in Italy at this point?
Germany is where they're saying, I think.
Yeah. And it's about to land.
And somewhere in there is a young boy who manages to be outside the White House while this is happening and sees the rocket coming.
Yes. Takes a picture in the night with his camera.
What happens next? Tune in for the exciting conclusion after this.
No, I mean, the exciting conclusion is somehow Captain decides right then to fucking knock a wing off the missile, which somehow redirects it to Alaska.
Yeah, so he basically stomps one of the tail fins on the rocket just enough to completely change its trajectory at the last. Why did he wait until it was 5 seconds from impacting the White House?
He didn't
want to
hit the kid. I don't know.
No, but like, why not do this like over Germany?
No
like,
idea. Also, how much fuel is in that rocket? No idea.
Listen, man, I'm not here to judge someone. If you can't, like, strap yourself to a rocket and be in their shoes for a minute, how do you think you would respond in that situation?
All right,
that rocket made its way all the way to Alaska, where it crashes in the snow, and you got a hand out of the snow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And it makes it all the way to Alaska, and we've made it all the way.
Oh, but wait, before we go.
Damn, I did it.
Before we go, I have to say, there's one scene before we go, because we're going to come back. I'm sure we're going to be in the future. It's the kid who took the picture. It was like with the pencil in his ear, the young Ned Beatty.
And this guy in the rocket broke the wing and stopped it from blowing up the whole White House and President Roosevelt. You believe me, don't you, Sam? Believe you, pictures don't lie, neither do best friends. It's a good thing I am your friend. You know why you didn't get blown up, don't you?
Why?
Because I loaned you my Captain Midnight Lucky Decoder. You had it on, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. You see, I told you it worked.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
It's okay, it's okay. See?
Just gotta figure out who it was.
Sam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is Ned Beatty's kid?
Yes.
Oh.
That is Ned Beatty's son.
And that kid?
Sure, why not?
I love kids. Is not good in that role.
No, he's not an actor. Absolutely not an actor.
I just wanted to put that in there before we hit the break, because I was like, man, this is tough.
You get Ned Beatty in your $3 million movie, and he says, I want my kid to play this part, you say
and
yes.
Does he need a speaking line? Yes. Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway,
got to make sure he gets residuals for the rest of his life from this movie that's going to do incredible business.
I'm sure he made a grand total of $100 off that limited edition Blu-ray.
Alex, please take us to the break.
I'm going to take us to the break, because we have to get to the future, and we have to see what fish out of water Captain America is all about. We'll be right back. And we're back. And folks, there's a frozen Captain America buried in the ice. Mm-hmm. What are we to do?
End the movie. Just could get Wolverine to do it.
God, if Wolverine was in this movie, I feel like a lot of problems would have been solved much faster.
I mean, as we get to the future, I feel like we need to mention just the casualness with which everything about the office of the presidency is treated in this movie is mind-blowing to me.
Like, from the wardrobe on down.
But even starting with the ease with which that little kid who was there for the missile near miss becomes president. Like, just,
it's a nice little montage, some newspaper flying newspapers.
Just a few newspapers fly by, and the next thing you know, he's president. Because he said when he was a kid to his mom, I want to be president one day.
But he's a reformer. You know what? I got to give this guy credit. Yeah. He had a real platform.
Yes. Kimball wins presidency. Kimball family ecstatic, this says. But yeah, they do. Yeah, you're right. They do say, like, oh, he was elected with the thinnest margin in history.
Yep.
And he's there to clean up the environment because it's, you know, yes, late 80s, very, 90s.
I have to say, like, the whole movie has just got this really staunch environmentalist kind of thing going between him and, like, did you watch the end of the credits?
Yeah.
There is a message at the end of the credits of this movie that straight up says, please support the Environmental Protection Act of 1990.
I mean, it does,
like,
yes.
Like, the movie's got a position. I'll give him that.
I wonder if there's some funding that came in. This was a pretty, you know, this is probably Captain Planet-esque era, right? This is...
Yes. Captain Planet existed at this time.
This is like, maybe they got some money from somebody to make it. Hey, if you can add in some environmental stuff, we'll give you some money here.
The vibe I get is that, like, Albert Pion and the screenwriter both just had, like, you know, we need something to hang this on. What is a good thing that everyone can rally around that an evil person, you know, would want to derail? And environmental protections feels like a pretty easy softball toss there.
Or even more than that, it's what will the institution institutionalized stuff in the United States not accept? And apparently it's getting
the Pentagon, especially
plastics.
Yes. Because I don't know if you know this, the U.S. military is the biggest polluter on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a shadowy cabal of like industrialists and military types and organized criminals running everything, like, what's a good thing for them to get hung up on? Yeah. Pollution, reducing emissions, all that stuff.
What's a good thing to put them all in front of a really ornate table to talk about?
Yeah.
Yes. To then have Red Skull go off about the last...
He got plastic surgery.
Yeah,
okay. You know, he wanted to improve himself.
Extensive plastic surgery, they say later. Still pretty red, though.
Pretty red, pretty scarred up there. Looks like a Dick Tracy villain at this point, but...
Sure.
Yes.
But he goes on...
But not one of the good ones.
About the last 30-some-odd, 40 years, about all of the... Should we just assassinate
the... No, it's like 50 years at this point.
Yes.
The mid-40s is when that stuff was happening. It is now 1990, so it has been like 45 years.
One of the president's generals has defected and is looking to instigate an assassination plot, but no, assassination turns people into martyrs. Just look at the Kennedys and Martin Luther King, and look, I've been behind all of this.
When I planned all those assassinations, I realized after the fact, actually, this was not the best way to do this.
If Kimball ain't stopped, you're going to see everything that you worked for and planned for the last 30 years go right down the crapper. And so fast it'll make your head spin.
Aren't you being a little dramatic, General?
No, he's not.
Cut the crap. All I want to know is when we're going to kill the little son of a bitch. And how.
We don't kill him at all.
We don't?
Assassination isn't worth the trouble. It took me 2 years to find Sirhan, 3 to find Oswald. The king job alone costs us over $22 million. And what do we get for all our pains? Saints. Martyrs to the cause. You, my friends, are statesmen, generals, captains of industry. I am only a humble businessman who doubles in science. Before you make your decision, may I suggest, instead of killing Kimball, we control him using a brain implant I have invented. Then he will do whatever we wish.
Vicky says, Martin Luther King cost $20 million or $2 million or something, and look what happened there. And it's like, man.
It's just not cost effective.
It's just not cost effective. When does he say, is this before we took the break? Pity him. He's like a child. Is that when he's fighting him?
I think that's when he's fighting him, yeah.
There's that line, and then there's...
Because at that point, he doesn't know that Captain America's back. No one does.
Pity him. He's like a child. And there's also a line when they're making Captain America I thought was kind of funny, where he says, he's no Superman, but they're going to love him, which was...
They also reference Namor, the Submariner, and the Human Torch when those kids are talking to each other.
Oh, yes!
And they're trying to figure out which superhero it was they saw.
Yes, yes, which I thought was funny. I mean... Listen, Superman's not in the Marvel universe, so I guess it's a simpler time, let's say. But anyway, Red Skull is holding court. He clearly has done this before. He has escaped.
He has a vaguely Valeria Golino-looking daughter who has exactly one emotional state, and it is, I'm going to kill you, but I don't really care about it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Very 80s, late 90s, or early 90s looking, also Italian, and...
There's a lot of very young, hot Italians that seem to be that make up the bulk of Red Skull's force.
Yeah, a lot of leather
and like finely tailored suits.
Yeah, and some neon, you know.
Yeah,
because it does have that look. But yes, he's going through and basically trying to put together a plan to get the president. At this point, there's going
to
be some
to
kind
kidnap
of
kidnap him and mind control him.
Yes,
also the. The president who hangs out in his office in some extremely cheesy dad jeans and
very cool.
Those are some JCPenney jeans,
yes,
right there.
Yes, very much so. Like, again, just everything about the presidency is so ridiculous in this.
And the president's young friend is now a reporter. Ned Beatty's working the beat.
I guess I get it. Like, everybody thinks he's crazy for having this photo and thinking there's some super soldier out there without any proof or whatever. So, like, maybe he would want to keep it on the low and not go through, like, chain of command or whatever. But the idea that the president is just...
Can't look up.
Is just dispatching his, you know, childhood friend, like, middle-aged reporter guy to go do top-secret government business is just so dumb.
It's really incredible.
But in the meantime here, there's something going on in Alaska where, I don't know, what's the premise
it's
or the pretense?
Some kind of research station thing happening here. It's like a German-Canadian co-production, which of course it is, because that way Captain America can hear German spoken and be freaked out when he hears it.
Yeah.
Though they also don't really do anything with that other than him skulking off into the snow like he's fucking Bigfoot at one point.
Yeah. Well, it comes back again in the next scene or two, but... But this ice scene is just, it's very, like, The Thing-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's very, like, Arctic research station with a big block of ice with something in it, and they seem a little freaked out, and then he just bursts out of there. Yeah.
You can see him breathing through the ice, which is very funny.
That's amazing. My girlfriend pointed this out when we were watching it. Did he have the shield when he was on the rocket? I guess they must have,
because otherwise I don't know how else he would have gotten it.
Thanks, Red Skull.
He wakes up with the shield in the ice somehow, but anyway.
Yeah.
It's really neither here nor there. Let's just assume it was bolted to his butt. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's this bizarre scene of him. How does everybody end up in the exact same place here?
He's
running through the Canadian wilderness, and the Red Skull's assassins and daughter find him at exactly the same time that this reporter finds him.
So there's a newspaper story about the research people finding a mystery person in the ice, and I think there's like a very bad blurry photo of what they found, and somehow that finds its way to Red Skull, because I mean, look, he's Mr. Crime. He knows all the crimes. He has to be plugged into world events.
Well, of course, but I mean, given the size of the Canadian wilderness, just the idea that everybody is going to end up at the exact same place all at the same time is just so stupid.
It's very stupid, because again, also Ned Beatty also ends up there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And our first example of one of Cap's less heralded superpowers, which is tricking people into giving you their car by pretending to be car sick.
Oh, what a doof. Like, he thinks that Ned Beatty is some German spy. He's driving his Volkswagen truck. He's heard the German. He's telling
him
that
Italians are after him.
He's got a tape deck on the dash that says "Made in Japan." It's just a lot of very conspicuous shots of Captain America hearing German or seeing Japanese products or whatever, and just like getting increasingly tense and freaked out.
I saw a movie once where they tried to do this to some English spy. Fake newspapers, fake radio, the whole thing.
I guess it wouldn't do much if I were to tell you that the President of the United States has sent me to find you on a matter of global importance. Not much.
It's October 17th, 1993.
Okay. It's still 1943, and I am a Nazi spy. So why am I asking you questions about my own side? Look, you mind? Just tell me everything you know about a guy they called the Red Skull. It could be 1492 for all I care. Yeah, he's still alive. We don't know where he is or who he is. We know that he's using the name he used before the war. He's had extensive plastic surgery. We know that he is a kingpin in a powerful international cartel, which I believe is responsible for a great deal of the pain and misery on this entire planet. You see, I have got proof that this Red Skull guy was closely involved in the murders of Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King. Jesus. You don't even know who I'm talking about, do you? Look, the important thing is this. The Red Skull's next target is President Kimball. And if this country loses Tom Kimball, it will be a disaster. Captain America, you gotta help us. There was a scientist, an Italian. Her name was Dr. Vasili? Yeah. Now, she would have known what his name was before. She's got some papers or
a diary.
Would you know where she would have left them?
Would you pull the car over, please? I think I'm going to be sick.
What?
Would you please pull over the car? I am going to get sick.
Okay, all right.
Until he's like, I'm going to puke.
I'm going to be car sick. And he just like Ned Beatty, just hook, line, and sinker.
Well, he's like, they pull over, he gets out, he walks like 20 feet from the car, and then Nady's like, are you okay? And he just sprints back to the car and steals it.
It sprint is really overselling it. It's more of a healthy jog.
Yeah, and it steals it and leaves him there.
And I guess, drives all the way to L.A., but it looks like at some point he started instead like stowing away on tractor trailers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And his Molson, next to his Molson. Yes.
And then somehow finds his way back to Redondo Beach and looking for his lost love. And also, again, somewhere in there, Red Skull catches wind that there is a lost love and that it could, maybe Captain America has gone to California.
Yeah. How does Ned Beatty wind up with those like letters and documents? Like when
that is just like the convenience of everybody meeting up in the wilderness. Like he just finds this file.
It's just,
well, like, I think the president might have gotten it for him.
Maybe so. Okay, sure. Yeah. Maybe you can infer something. Okay. It's another one of those situations where just like 10 seconds of dialogue would have totally set up this otherwise very ridiculous thing.
If not all the way justified, it certainly would have set it up, yes.
I also love that Steve Rogers has to carry around his shield in this like little shopping bag for most of the movie, too. It's like, it is weird.
Like, what are you
going to
do with that?
I don't
know. Very conspicuous.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bowling ball bag he has to have.
But he gets home. He finds his lost love. She's an old lady.
She's an older woman.
Actually, she's the same lady, but in old makeup.
And I thought the makeup, again, was not bad.
Yeah.
She's remarried, or she's married.
She waited a long time, though. Even though she says early on, I'll wait for you forever, she does wait until her late 30s.
Well, that's a very, very, let's say, she says, I was 38. I wanted to have kids. I needed to get married. She's like, okay.
Listen, fertility technology had not really advanced super far at that stage. So,
yep, I mean, that's the line they're going to use to put the clock on. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, she's got a husband who seems like a guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, there's no real impression of him other than he has a mustache.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a daughter who looks a lot like her, but also isn't wearing a weird 1940s wig, so you don't immediately realize it's her, but yeah, it's the same actress.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they have I will say the reunion is fine.
Sure.
You know, it's sensible the way the characters approach it. But you don't get to live through that for very long because they just murder that lady and try to murder the husband real fast.
And the friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of shocked. Like, they straight up just kill off the reporter friend and the mom.
Yep.
Or his long lost love. Like, Ned, 5 minutes.
Ned Beatty's out. I guess the dad survives.
Yeah.
He's in the hospital.
And then they insinuate that the mom would not give up Steve Rogers, even though something horrible happened to her, like torture.
I was kind of shocked that they killed her off.
Yeah.
When I saw him zipping up the body bag, I was like, oh, wow. I thought they were going to kidnap her. Not.
They got to start paying that actress like at a higher rate if they give her more lines as that character.
Fair.
So,
yeah.
But yes, that is the inciting event that leads Steve Rogers to say, okay, I got to go take down Red Skull. Oh, also that in reading a scrapbook that reveals the fact that Red Skull is behind every major assassination of the last 40 years.
Also, it's a news report at that point where the president's been kidnapped as well.
Yes.
Yes.
He was at some sort of conference in Europe. Yeah.
That was like maybe the last piece of the puzzle here is that, like, oh, the president was kidnapped from his hotel when some armed men stormed the building. Like, mm-hmm. Have you ever done 5 seconds of reading about what the security detail is like when the president travels?
It's Red Skull, man. He could do it.
Idea of the president just checking into a hotel on his own, staying in a room.
I mean, look, I would absolutely believe that those Secret Service agents were absolutely stunned into submission by the sheer hotness of those Italians when they stormed that hotel.
Or maybe they had mind control devices.
Yeah.
In.
When we went to Korea, me and Drew went to Korea for that StarCraft tournament in Seoul. It was the same week that I think it was the G8 was there. So, like, every major world leader was also in town. And, like, I think we drove by where Obama was staying at one point. And I forget who, somebody was telling, like, they choose where the president is staying, like, largely based on how, like, physically defensible the location is. Like, in case there is major attack, like, is this actually, like, sequestered enough that we can, like, defend choke points and stuff? Like, the idea that they just waltzed in and took this guy is so funny.
If you want to write an indignant letter to Menahem Golan and say, this is not believable, I will support you in this endeavor.
I'm good. I just thought it was very funny.
It is very funny. The whole setup for it is absolutely batshit stupid. And the next sequence coming up here is another one of my three favorite bits of this entire movie, which is him finding the old lab in the diner, which has definitely forgotten there was an old lab buried under there.
Uh-huh.
And this whole sequence of the Italians and him fighting in this old laboratory is spectacular in its shittiness.
It's very
both
bad.
In the fight choreography and the fact that they are clearly going for some kind of minimalist lighting thing, but it's so minimalist that there are literally shots in here you cannot see what is happening.
Yeah, they basically crash through the ladies' room of this diner to find the old underground lab where it's kind of, I mean, listen, that's kind of neat, right? These people in this diner don't know, but of course, like the last scene, everybody converges at the same time. This is a shitty fight.
It's so fucking bad, dude.
I feel like you see kind of the only like real superpower move he has in this movie, besides getting shot a lot, is jumping over people, which he does multiple times, including here.
Yeah, he's like, got that wide receiver kind of hurdle thing, like, going on.
He can just kind of like leap over people right when they're about to shoot him and hit him from behind.
Also, he can fling anything that is shield-like and have it work roughly the same.
Like pipe, like tops of pipes or something.
Well, he pulls like a thing off almost one of the boilers.
Yeah. Yes. It just
clobbers a guy with it.
It's just not good.
It's pretty.
But it's great. Like, it's terrible, but it's great.
Right. Man, there's the writing, at least what ended up on screen, is just so goofy. They were going there to get the Italian scientist's diary.
Yes.
Yes.
And he just goes right in there into the secret underground lab that seems like it hasn't been touched in 50 years. like goes right to a drawer in a desk and opens it and is like, here's the diary, let's go. Like, just have the secret diary. She just happened to leave it in this one drawer you knew about, the secret lab.
And the diary is just so he can figure out the name of Red Skull, right? Like, that's the whole thing.
The whole time they're just trying to ID Red Skull and where he is so they can get to him and find the president.
And what does she say? Why can she read Italian and speak? As he took correspondence course?
I think she went to Italy for a summer. She was in Milan for a summer.
Okay. Yeah, it was something like really like, and she's like, she's pretty, she's a quick learner.
Yes. Yeah. She knows enough to be conversational about it.
Yeah, so she's able to read the diary, find that the Red Skull was from a house of the Three Angels or something, like some clue that leads them puts them on the case to Italy, and
where they go visit that house that he was abducted from.
Oh, they rent the smallest Fiat.
it is comically small.
It is. Like, if you're to tell me that
the Bourne identity, this shit ain't. Let me tell you right now, like, there is no good car chase happening with this car.
Are they doing it for laughs?
I don't know.
I think at least partially, yes.
Maybe okay. I think about the time that he pulls the "I'm going to be sick" move again on her to take the car again.
Did they forget?
The point that I was like, okay, I think that they. The shot of him running back over to the car this time, so comical.
Sharon, could you pull over for a minute? I think I'm gonna be sick.
Captain America is car sick? Are you okay? What are you doing? Wait a minute, what are you doing?
I can't take you into danger, Sharon. That much at least I can do for Bernie. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for my help. Open this door.
Even the very tall need to own an automobile.
Yes, that's like, all I can think
of. This was the largest vehicle that I could afford.
Like, it's just, I think it is. I think the whole thing is kind of played for laughs, sure.
Yeah.
They go visit that house that the Red Skull was abducted from, and they're like, oh, this place was a wreck when my parents bought it.
Mm-hmm.
They did save a box of the things they found here, though, and what happens to be in there? But that recorder from the intro that recorded the sounds of him being abducted. And how convenient.
They bring it to the Italian VCR repair place, and he fixes it up, and he plays it. Mm-hmm. And she uses her Walkman or whatever, her recorder, to record the sound. Old meets new.
Without hitting the record button, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It's a good recording.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we get, like, I don't know, this is like a functional chase scene, at least.
I guess you could call it that.
Red Skull's daughter and compatriots are trying to kill them again.
And this is the part where they ambush them at the restaurant, right? And then there's like a part that comes after that. Yeah. Because this is a terrible ambush setup, I have to tell you.
They just literally take the table right next to them and just pull out guns. They slowly pull out guns and prepare to shoot them.
Was kind of confused what was happening here. Like, yeah, they're in an outside cafe. She shoulder checks the Sharon on the way in and to get her attention.
Sorry.
And then sits down and then they slowly take out, like,
gives her the eye. Like, they are literally making eye contact while she slowly pulls the gun out.
I don't know.
You're not being subtle here. If you wanted to get the jump on your target, maybe.
Here's the thing. If you are the leader of an international crime consortium, I'm going to say right now, don't hire your kids to run your hit squads, because nepotism, this is not a thing you want nepotism for.
She's not very...
not talented.
Well, like you said earlier, there are also like unlimited number of Italian young adults here running around trying to get in on this action. Young Skull has done a recruiting drive.
Yeah. Young Skull is my hip-hop persona.
Young Skull, in his early days, made a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you get all these... you know, these kind of back alleys with like various motorbikes, and there's an Italian sports car in here at one point chasing them.
But it's all bad. There's no real immediacy to any of it.
They have one of the most cliched things you can do in a movie, I feel like, which is the small time like produce stand owner seeing that his produce cart is about to get wrecked by the thing that is that they're being chased with, like waving his arms going, no, no, no. And then they just drive right through
it. And it's not even good one of those, though.
No, not even a good one of those. It also has the other super cliche thing with if there is a guy on a motorcycle chasing you, at some point you are going to stop that motorcycle while he is still on it and he is going to go flying.
Yeah.
And that it isn't even good.
No.
There's also this, is that a Lamborghini that he's driving, that car, this is a sports car or whatever, but like
they're driving Porsches later. I don't know what they're driving in that sequence.
I'm not sure, but there's these two small children sitting in the road.
Right, yes, just rolling a ball.
And like that car gets fairly close, not close, but like mm-hmm. that car is maybe 20, 30 feet away from those kids and still driving, you know. It's just like, I wonder. Safety standards on set for small children were maybe a little looser.
They were, though I will say, I don't know of Albert Pyun being the sort of person who cuts a lot of corners as far as that stuff goes.
No,
so
probably.
I imagine it was well rehearsed.
He's no John Landis.
No, definitely not. This is kind of getting into the final sequences here. There's some cutting back to Red Skull with the president strapped to a dental chair where he's going to inject him with the fucking mind control serum, but it takes 24 hours before it'll fully take hold or whatever. So they have him in the jail cell of this. I'm just going to go out and call this a historical monument that they have made their fucking evil base. It uh-huh. is just a castle near the water that clearly they were able to get shooting rights for. This is not a functional place.
Also, we have to mention the outcome of that chase sequence is another amazingly convenient plot point.
Mm-hmm.
she manages to get Red Skull's daughter's purse from the cops who were cleaning up the scene.
Yes.
And Like the address of his evil supervillain secret lair is right there on her ID.
It's on her like license, yes.
Like you didn't even fake the address on your ID of your dad's supervillain castle.
I'm telling you, don't hire your kids for this shit. They're morons. They don't know what they're doing.
I died.
What is the president pockets the thing that just has a skull and crossbones on it?
I think he assumes it's something corrosive, and
it is, apparently. And his, like, weird subplot of trying to break out of this prison cell by slowly melting the lock, or like...
Well, he doesn't know if Captain America is coming to save him, he's gotta think on his feet, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, they do eventually amble their way down the coastline to get to where this castle is, and are, again, extremely slow-speed chased by these two Porsches. Which apparently were brought by the stunt actors from Europe that they hired, who drove them down to the set. And apparently one of them, while they were racing these cars down to the set, they managed to fuck up the gearbox entirely on one of them.
Great.
Nice.
But yes, these are just like, they brought them for these scenes, and they have nothing nice things to say about the stunt performers, I will say. But yeah, then she's like, I'm going to do some misdirection. I'm going to take the car.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't really do much of anything. And now Captain America has to walk.
It just gets her. Yeah, it gets her caught very quickly.
This is maybe the best shot, if I remember correctly. This is the best shot of the gang, right? Because the whole
they're all posing in front of their car, waiting for her to show up.
Leaning against the trunk of the car, smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
They just like rowdy teens.
Yeah.
Anyway, it very rapidly gets us into the end game of they're both prisoners in the castle.
Yep. And
Captain America's got to waltz right in there.
Mm-hmm. And waltz he does.
They do give the daughter a second to be extremely shitty and taunting Sharon about how she killed her mother.
A word of advice, my friend. All this frowning all the time is very, very bad. If you are not careful, you will end up with terrible lines. Here. And here. And here. Like your mother.
And I think he's right above her, right? The president's like
yeah, yes. can they like see each other through a hole in the floor or something?
I believe so.
Also,
yes.
Does he say Sharon at some point?
Yeah, I don't know how he knows her name.
Yes. What? Later on, he just calls out to Sharon. It's like, you're the president. Have you ever met this woman?
How did you know?
Were you talking offline where we didn't see it?
Well, like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever.
Look, again, parts of this script got excised, and I'm not going to, some of them might have connected some tissue here.
Maybe Red Skull and the daughter were talking about getting Captain America and Sharon. Maybe he put it together. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe they went to the same college. I don't know, but. Regardless, they break out, but, you know, it just in time for Captain America to come and save them from whatever is about to befall them.
Well, Ronnie Cox stages his own, the president stages his own escape.
He does, he breaks out.
He actually gets out and just about gets away.
Except...
And then he decides to take a header off the side of the castle rather than let Red Skull capture him.
Mm-hmm.
Who should be hanging right there to grab him on the way down?
Well, Steve Rogers himself.
Because he needs, it's not like they can kill the president. They need him alive. They're doing this mind control thing. So I thought it was a good move. It was a good move.
But it's one of several holes in Red Skull's plan here.
But now now they're both in the castle together.
Yeah. And so this is like the momentous, you know, he saw this guy as a kid strapped to a rocket and he's been obsessed with finding out who he is ever since. And this is the momentous, we're finally meeting face-to-face moment.
Thanks!
Don't mention it, sir. Steve Rogers.
We've met.
I don't see how. You mean, you were the little boy?
I've been waiting for this moment for a long time.
Gee whiz. We gotta get going, Mr. President.
Yeah. Days like this.
Sam wanted me to give this to you. It was the last thing he said before he died. They got him.
They've got Sharon.
I know. Wait on the North Shore. There's some caves there at the base of the cliff where you can hide. I'll come and get you when we get out.
What, are you kidding? I'm not bailing out on Captain America. Let's go.
And it's not particularly, though I will say it looks like there's a nice, like, kind of like 10 seconds in there of them, like, kind of realizing who they are and, like, having a moment. But after that, there's nothing.
Look, I went out of my way to find a few nice things to say about this movie, and here's one. I have never seen Ronnie Cox allowed to play pure joy before in anything.
No, he's almost always either a hard-ass or evil.
He is almost always in, like, Dick Jones mode at a minimum in terms of being an asshole. And, like, here he is just a dude. I mean, granted, he's the president, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, he is just joyous to finally meet Captain America. And I was like, holy shit, I've never seen this part of Ronnie Cox's range before.
So here's the thing. I don't know how much actual acting he's doing here, because I think this might be closer to what Ronnie Cox is like in real life.
That's cool, though. You know, it's like, okay, here, I've never seen this side of this actor before.
So he doesn't act much anymore. He does occasional things, but mostly, so he's from New Mexico originally. He lives there now, and he's a musician.
Oh, weird.
He just makes music. That's like his personal passion.
Interesting.
And so he turns down like 90% of the things that are offered to him because he just wants to hang out in New Mexico and play music.
I get it.
Yeah.
But he's happy. He's psyched. He's met his... Captain America is also very elated. It was like, you're that boy. I'm that boy. Let's go. But then he goes... he says something like... oh, man, Sam would love to see this. Or Sam told me to stay out of trouble or something. Captain America goes...
By the way, your friend's dead.
He doesn't even say that. He goes, oh yeah, Sam wanted me to have this. He's dead. And gives him his little, little badge.
Junior detective's badge or whatever.
Decoder thing.
Anyway, let's go.
Yeah. Let's go into one of the most incoherently shot final action sequences I've ever seen in any movie. It's not just the shooting. The rapid fire editing of these like little bits of combat sequences are just jarring and incoherent.
Is it? I can't tell. Is this the like run up to the roof here?
Yeah.
As, yeah.
Okay.
It's just them, you know, it's them beating up a bunch of goons.
Yeah.
Flinging the shield around, yes, knocking some dudes around.
As they run up the stairs to find Red Skull.
Oh, yes. Okay,
knocking, yes. Using the shield to, like, collapse a castle wall on some goons at one point.
Yes, there's a lot of, like, off cuts of, like, you're moving and then you're moving the same direction again. And, like, you're throwing a thing, but then they show you throwing it again from a different angle. Yeah. Like,
it's
a little hard to follow in spots. Oh, and also he runs into the general in the course of all this.
Oh, the president,
Just skulking out of there.
Yeah.
I think the thing this movie does Captain America dirtiest on, apart from the costume, which is pretty dirty as well, the shield as a weapon has never seemed lamer than it does here.
He cuts that, like, one guy's gun, which is cool.
Yeah, but like just the way it's shot, the way it's used, like everything, it has this really plasticky, very weightless feel to it, and like it does just feel like it's a boomerang, but we don't really know why, but here, it's what he has, so let's go with it. It's a bad weapon.
Feels like a liability,
here.
Like a burden.
Yeah.
And also, he gets shot a bunch, so the shield's not doing... the president gets shot at some point, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he takes one in the arm.
Yeah, everybody's getting a little dinged.
And this is all just leading up to this final confrontation with Red Skull, which, one, him sitting on that chair in that courtyard by himself, just kind of fucking... staring off into the middle distance, waiting for him to show up is great. Is
that it's almost like a throne.
Yeah.
Is that before the piano?
Yeah, yes. The piano's after that.
Okay.
Yeah. There's, you know, like I said, I was looking for some nice things to say. Like, there's a couple of examples of, like, interesting shot framing or editing or something here that I'm not necessarily going to say are good, but they at least, like, had an idea and went for them. Like, there's this almost, like, fighting game sequence of these, like, close-ups of Red Skull and Captain America back and forth, where they just go back and forth between them talking shit to each other, and it's just, like, really close-up side shot, almost like this fighting game portrait-looking thing.
I don't know how it is that you are here, or how you remain so unchanged, but it doesn't matter, my brother. Today, you will die. 50 years ago, you were Dr. Vasselli's ridiculous idea. You remain a clownish symbol that no one cares about.
I care.
You care. Then come to me, my brother. Let us see if this heart of yours is stronger than my hate.
It's very ridiculous.
It's quite ridiculous.
And this leads to, just this absolutely batshit final bit where he runs up to where he has this concert piano just sitting on a rooftop.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have to, this maybe doesn't play as well if you don't have the movie in front of you, but there's a couple other things before we get up there.
Yeah.
That spin kick that the Red Skull does. Do you remember
that? He knows martial arts.
It's like, it's from a very, like, wide angle, because I'm sure it was a stunt person.
Oh, I do, like, remember, like, being like, yeah, that's a stunt person. That's got
to
be a stunt person.
They cut to this, like, really wide shot, just long enough for him to do this extremely elaborate spin kick at Captain America. And then there's this sequence of him shooting a machine gun at him while he's, like, using the shield to block it.
And he, like, rolls with it.
And the cuts are, like... it's like three cuts per second back and forth, as
it's
if it's like
so many.
It's like a machine cut of cuts. I mean, a machine gun of cuts back and forth between the two. It's crazy looking.
Is that when he does the, like, after that, when he does the, like, thumbs up thing? Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes. It's when the president throws his shield to him.
Okay.
He's just running at him while he's, like, shooting the machine gun at him, and it just cuts back and forth faster than you can even follow.
Mr. President, thank you.
That's the shot I was talking about. That whole sequence is so jarring.
It's totally nuts to watch.
But yes, that is what leads to him running up to the fucking stairwell to his outdoor piano, which I'm going to say the effort to get that thing up there and to bring it back down when the weather's bad.
It rains,
like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, keeping that thing tuned.
And his whole thing is that, okay, so he's shooting the machine gun to keep Captain America from running up there, and he's got this detonator that he's going to use to drop some kind of X number of megaton bomb on Southern Europe and make it uninhabitable for 150 years, give or take a decade or two. And the way this ends, is nonsense. Because, one, was this your plan? If this is your plan, like your getaway, fuck it, everyone's going to die, so I'm just going to make this suck for everybody plan. Not great to begin with. But then there's this weird mechanism here where they're going through, like, trying to, like, they get the recording of Red Skull's abduction, and they're going to play it for him. And I don't know what that's supposed to do. Is he supposed to have a come to Jesus moment of like, oh God, I've wasted my life. I've become as terrible. What do you think is going
to
happen?
I think they were trying to arrest him with a traumatic memory, to be frank. Like that's.
But
kinda,
it doesn't
that's,
work.
That's well, he kind of goes into some.
Is he suddenly just starts shooting at the air and is
staring
like,
off into the distance state long enough for them to close the distance.
He does blap, blap, blap to the sky for a second, but that doesn't really seem to do anything. His daughter's there and like, he's still got the detonator. He's still gonna just blow everything up. But somehow that was the plan all along, actually, was to distract him long enough so that they could just throw the shield at him.
We are both tragedies. And now I send our tortured souls to rest.
Speak for yourself.
And this is my final favorite sequence in this movie.
Yes.
This is how we dispatch the Red Skull. We distract him for 3 seconds so I can fling my shield, which he knows I already have, at him, which he's not prepared for at all, and mannequin flying down the cliff.
The shot, the extended shot of a body just tumbling down this cliff.
Like straight out of Top Secret or something.
Incredible.
It's like 15 seconds. It feels like 7 minutes.
And bouncing off the rocks.
And then his daughter picks up the gun and is about to, with a grin on her face, even though her father just died, and is about to shoot him. And the shield gets her on the return.
Yep.
It's up.
Yep, that's that. You never expect that boomerang shield.
Couldn't have drawn it up like that if you tried.
It's a great ending.
And then these steps here? That's the thing I also don't understand. These special forces guys who are wearing fishnets on their face show up. What are they supposed to be?
Are they, maybe they're Italian special forces?
That was my assumption.
But then why are they wearing pantyhose?
They have to protect their identity. I don't know.
But they show up and it's just like, okay, here's him and the girl staring off into the sunset, and then another cut and zoom to Captain America's face staring you dead in the eye. What is that supposed to signify?
Like to me, because you know, his suit's all torn up and he's dirty and stuff at the end of the actual action. But then this last shot close up of him is like nice clean suit and everything. That read to me as almost this like Captain America will return in the further.
Yes.
You know, and, like it was almost like setting up some franchise that was absolutely never going to happen.
I saw some people in our Discord saying that at some point this movie was intended to be competition for Batman, and I've not seen any actual, like, you know, like in any quotes that say this is specifically what they were going for. But if that is true, you could not have missed the mark any harder.
They missed the mark.
Yeah,
it's wait, it ends with like the is it like the news report, right?
Yeah.
Like like Captain America will, or the president said some strange remark. When you're Captain America, that's all you need or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you to Captain America wherever you are or something.
It was a shout out to Captain America,
It's full on news report, like 160 nations agreed to the president's climate accords today in Rome.
In Rome today, 116 nations agreed to an environmental protection treaty. In a brief statement after the signing, President Kimball asked that we remember the many people who have gallantly sacrificed all to make our world a better place to live. The president closed his statement with this odd message. To Captain America, wherever he is, we're all back in the fight.
But then, like, it implies that, oh, is Captain America's not really a secret, right? The whole idea is that he's supposed to be known.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that when he went into the ice, he had not been publicly unveiled at that stage. Okay. Whereas, okay, so in the first Avenger, they do the whole thing of, like, he's doing the
icon.
USO shows.
Yeah.
Like, he's known. But here, none of that is the case. So he is kind of a secret at this point still.
What did Stan Lee think?
Stan Lee had had a cameo that was cut in this movie.
Oh really? That was in Blade as well, right? Wasn't it? Didn't he have something in Blade?
But the difference is the Blade one, I think that footage might still exist somewhere. There is no way any of that footage is still around for this movie.
It's not
that shit is in a fucking Yugoslavian salt mine somewhere.
It's not in the director's cut?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, we needed a film to round out the bottom of our current ongoing list, and Predator 2, while not a great movie by any stretch, I think is leaps and bounds more coherent than what is this. We now have, I think, personally, a very firm bottom of the list.
I'm going to say this is the worst movie we have seen. While there are parts that are entertaining, it's a mess of a movie.
It does not really work.
No. For, like we went over for the last hour or so, a lot of reasons, probably. But yeah, I'm going to add it to my list at the bottom.
Did you guys at least have fun with it?
I did. I'm glad I saw it.
At times.
I know not everyone shares my love of bad movies, but I hope that at least I pick a fun one for you.
Well, there are different ways in which a movie can be bad, and some of them are much more enjoyable than others, is what I would say. I think the only cardinal sin a movie can commit is to be boring.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there are parts of this that were veering into that territory for me, but there were also 6 or 8 different sequences thought were hilarious.
There are too many just aggressively baffling creative choices for this to truly be boring.
Like I said, the scene of the Nazi agent getting electrocuted and then the fight and the missile launch stuff, and there's some
that whole piano on the castle.
There is some entertaining stuff in here.
I have enjoyed the, I don't know whatever phase you want to call it, but the let's call it the Infinity series of Avengers and Thanos, and I enjoyed I saw all those. I think I might be out of steam for whatever they're doing now, but I enjoyed that, and it really made me appreciate what they had to do to make a successful comic book beyond successful, right?
Legend, because they were still trying for decades after this.
Yeah, so it really made me appreciate the smart and talented people that went in to make what became one of the biggest movie franchises of all time in those superhero movies. And you see how easy it is to mess it up. How goofy, how dumb, how much ground you have to cover in setting a superhero up. What choices are you going to make? What are you going to stick to canonically? Where are you going to veer? What are people going to care about? And so it's kind of a testament to how well done and the dumb lines you're going to have to write and being this guy's a skull. He has to be in the movie. He's got a head like a skull.
His name is literally Red Skull.
He's a
there
Nazi
are two character traits.
He's a Nazi Red Skull, and he's supposed to be terrifying. I don't know. It's your job to figure it out. That's why I'm paying you, right? And so, and they did, and they kind of did, and they made it.
Yeah, Hugo Weaving, I think, cuts a pretty terrifying Red Skull, even in the slightly limited effects budget that they had for that one. Not compared to this. There's no limit compared to this, but. No.
But yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Gotta give it up for Sam Raimi.
Yep.
Making probably the first true landmark excellent comic book movies, right? Well, I mean, Batman.
Blade was before this, and Batman was before this.
Yeah, but I think Spider-Man really ascended to a new level of, especially for the mainstream. I mean, Blade was very popular, of course, but Spider-Man.
Well, and those X-Men movies also did very well. Those first couple did very well.
But actually, yes, you're right. I always forget about X-Men being in that period for some reason.
I think I'm with you, though. I think the Spider-Man franchise hit a mainstream current that even the X-Men stuff didn't quite hit.
I remember coming out of Spider-Man 2 thinking okay, that was the first that was a just a movie was a movie ass that was a good
that's
movie.
A blockbuster ass great movie
and worked on multiple levels,
You don't have to be a comics fan to just go see this movie, right? X-Men, maybe you're I don't really understand all these characters and their powers and the whole thing. I like those movies as well. Even still, the X-Men movies, even at the time, I think struggled a little more finding its footing. I was just looking this up because I wanted to see the whole catalog, and there are some clunkers in the X-Men movies.
Oh yeah, I think X2 is the only one I would call a resounding success.
I like the earlier X-Men stuff, but there are clunkers along the way, and now that thing is a monster, maybe possibly too big of a machine. Yeah.
Maybe there's too many of those movies being made now.
Yeah, where they've, again, kind of lost the thread a bit. Or you know, wearing the formula thin a bit. The mix between, like, snark and self-awareness and, you know... like, because this one is zero snark. This is sincerity. Earnestness to a fault with their...
eagerness.
Eager and earnestness. Like,
yeah.
They're the only part that is maybe a little wink and nod is like, didn't really understand camouflage. That is like, okay, you know, at least you're acknowledging.
There's like a little bit of self-awareness in there, but not a lot.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It's good to see. It's good to see how it puts into relative perspective how difficult it might be when somebody makes it look easy to make a very good movie about such ridiculous content. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And honestly, I to a certain degree, I kind of cherish this weird ass era of Marvel stuff. Not because I think any of these movies are particularly good. They're not. But I love that they exist as artifacts of a time when they had no idea what the fuck they were doing in terms of trying to turn these characters into something that was a larger media property than the comics. Like, the Incredible Hulk show almost feels like an accident compared to everything else that they tried to put out in that era that was not a cartoon.
Yeah. I mean... shouldn't forget, Batman had a very good run early on, like in the TV series. Like, people enjoyed that Batman stuff. Wonder Woman had a good run. Like, superhero stuff did have traction in places, and that's probably why they were chasing it.
I'm talking specifically about Marvel, though, because Marvel's track record is very spotty. Yes.
But Marvel kind of couldn't find it. Like, I don't know. And
not
now,
for a long time.
And now I feel like DC is also in the place where they're looking for it. And they kind of can't find it.
I think DC is in a place where they had something, and then as soon as they saw what Marvel was doing, their attempts to try and turn themselves into that is ultimately what derailed them.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. They're rebooting again, right? DC? That's the whole
thing. Yep. Yeah. It's now the James Gunn-verse.
Just for my edification, James Gunn he's the Guardians of the Galaxy guy? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Wrapped it up. From A to Z.
And that is going to wrap us up for our movies for this month. We will have, obviously, one more Star Trek episode next week, and that is our triple finale. We will be watching the final three episodes of Star Trek Season 1. And those are The Alternative Factor, The City on the Edge of Forever, and Operation Annihilate.
Ooh, this sounds...
yes.
All good.
You have a little extra homework to do between now and next week to do the triple header here. And then once we're done with that episode, I think we will be announcing what's coming up in February and maybe some things beyond. We as the Nextlander cabal have to get together and decide some things, but we'll have some things to announce, I think, in next week's episode. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome.
And that's going to do it for this week on the Nextlander Watchcast. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone at home, for watching and listening along with us, especially for this one. We'll see you next time.